Coming to you live from beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut. It's the Tri-State Sports Guys. I'm Mike DePalma, alongside my co-host, Danny Santarella. I'm also behind the glass today, as Tony D is not with us. But we do have us joining from the Hoboken studio. The great Neil Lynch is back with us. Neil, are you with us, buddy?
I'm with you. I don't know how enthusiastic I am about it.
Neil, you haven't been here in a little while, dude. I missed you, pal. Everything all right?
Yeah, it's just been a series of unfortunate events. You know, we got relationship problems week one. Week two, I got the stand-up comedy special to end all stand-up comedy specials. And then week three, I'm all holed up with a post-surgery on my knee.
What was the, out of those three, like, what was the rank those as like, far as, like, best week off, second best week off, third week, the best week off? I mean, did the comedy show go well, dude?
I mean, it went pretty well. I don't want to, like, toot my own horn here, but when I came off the stage, one of the more notable comedians gave me a nice little fist bump, which normally when I come off the stage, no one wants to make eye contact, so I'll take a fist bump any day.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. Well, I'll tell you, it's good to have you back. We got a good show tonight, mostly all college hoops. We got from Kentucky Basketball Radio, Ryan Lamond. We got Tariq Turner from Fox Sports 1. And then we have another great just confirmed with us, Scotty Burrell.
Kind of like that. All right.
Yeah, Scotty Burrell just confirmed. So he'll be calling in the 9 o'clock hour. So I'm pretty excited. And Neil, I mean, I think right now neither of us are in the hunt for the money, I don't think, for the bracket pool that we did. But you and I, out of the five guys on the Tri-State Sports Guys, are the closest to the money, right? So does that make us the basketball expert? Clearly, I'm the football expert because the pool that we did, I actually came in second place and got a couple hundo in my pocket. But am I now the college sports expert on the show?
I'm afraid so. I mean, with our pool, I have like six or eight brackets going on, so the odds of me winning something are pretty high. But with ours, I basically went with the defaults. You know, there was the three defaults or four defaults that you could have. One was top seeds. Another one was random historical performance and then random. And I just went with one of each. And, yeah, you can tell it didn't pan out so well. But, yeah, I'm kind of curious to hear Santa's take on what's going down and what's happening with all the upsets that have been happening.
Well, it's surprising. I mean, that's the first thing. You know, I thought UConn, like, for example, was a good team. I never saw this kind of run coming here. I thought they caught a break. I'm not taking anything away from them with George Niang being out against Iowa State. That was a big break for them. The kind of guys can break down, you know, some big men. Kentucky, I think what you're seeing here, and I've said it 2 weeks running now, this is Calipari's best coaching job. I mean, to me, hands down, I mean, he's won a national title in 2012. He's been in, I think, this is his fifth Final Four, dating back to one with UMass in the 90s. He's got a young team now that's finally kind of coming together, playing smart. And then, you know, you look at Florida and Wisconsin. I've downplayed Wisconsin all year. I was wrong. I mean, does that kind of show how we run here, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, you're way off.
You're wrong. You just admit you're wrong. I was 100% wrong. They're slow. They're not athletic, but they play a perfect game together. And then you see Florida's just super athletic, great defense, another great coaching job by Billy Donovan. He, you know, outside of Krzyzewski's got to be the best in the business right now. I mean, he's got a chance. He's the favorite to win. He's 4-5 as the observation to win his third national championship.
That's so. Well, I mean, up here, we're all about UConn making this run. But, you know, they're not the lowest seed in the tournament. Kentucky comes in as an 8 seed. So we're going to bring on the Tucci Lumber Hotline. Host Kentucky Sports Radio, coming in from Kentucky on the Choo Choo Lumber Hotline. We got Ryan Lamond. Ryan, are you with us tonight?
Hey guys, how's it going up there?
Are you guys as excited out in Kentucky as we are in Connecticut, or what?
Well, kind of. You know, they're kind of similar. Both fan bases kind of unexpected to be here at this point. I mean, for a Kentucky standpoint, they finished the season losing three of their last four, and there were a lot of the fan base wondering if they could get out of the round of 32 and even make it to the Sweet 16. So, yeah, we're playing with house money a little bit, kind of gravy, but, you know, for Connecticut and Kentucky, they're playing as good as anybody right now. You can't count either one of them out.
Oh, I 100% agree, and I know Danny here was just talking about the Vegas odds with Florida going out right now 4-5 to win, which is pretty crazy at this stage of the game. But what's interesting to me, and we talked about it last week, coming out of the, you know, into the Sweet 16 game, for an 8 seed, and I know Kentucky's got the legacy and all that, but for whatever reason, the sense around here, and I don't know if it's the same sense you get out by you, but nobody was all that shocked that Kentucky's there. I think even though their season was a disappointing season, even though last season was obviously very disappointing, starting 5 freshmen this year, it's like they get less respect than any other low seed to make it to the Final Four I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I think it's because the way they finished the season. Like I said, they lost 3 of their last 4. They should have lost 4 of their last 5. They just really kind of fell apart. The wheels kind of fell off, and I think they lost a lot of respect from, you know, the national media and the voters and the polls and things. So they probably should have been a 6 seed, maybe a 7. An 8 seed was kind of, I think, a little low for them. But you're right. I mean, they've obviously proven they've got the talent and they've got the ability. And I heard what your one guy said there about this being Coach Cal's maybe greatest coaching job. When you look at what he's been able to do with 5 freshmen, and first guy off the bench is a sophomore, and then the next guy off the bench is a freshman. I mean, it's unbelievable when you think about what he's been able to do with this young group of guys to put them back in the Final Four for sure.
Ryan, this is Dan. Why do you think that is, that he's not getting any kind of attention here for this being – it's essentially a Fab Five, and no one's really talking about that. And you mentioned the young guys coming off the bench. You mentioned them getting in without Willie Cauley-Stein, you know, being injured. Why do you think it is? Is it because he recruits all these young guys, these one-and-done guys, or are people just – they never give Calipari credit?
Well, I think that's a lot of it, and they don't like his one-and-done philosophy of going to get these great young players out of high school and try to make a run in a championship. Now, he was able to do it 2 years ago, but he had Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and then he had a senior in Darius Miller, and he had 2 sophomores that had been to the Final Four the year before. Well, this year he's got nobody. You know, this year's team went to the NIT last year. These 2 sophomores that were playing, Alex Poitras and Willie Cauley-Stein, they didn't even make the tournament last year. So it's why, to me, I wish he would get a little more respect than he has been, but I think a lot of it is so many people are anti-Cal, and they just don't like his methods and how he does things. But, you know, I can just tell you this from talking to him yesterday before they left. He's feeling pretty good about himself, and he's feeling pretty good about his team because he walks with a little swagger, and you know, he's got his chest out a little bit more, and he knows now they've got to give him a little credit.
Yeah, you know, Ryan, I've been a lifelong Kansas fan, so that 2012 championship game still stings a little bit. And obviously the 2008 matchup with Memphis, so we've had one we won, we've had one we lost. But the thing that's impressed me the most outside of Julius Randle and all the young guys that they have, the big guys, is what he's done with the Harrison twins. I mean, these are 2 young guards that arguably the toughest position in college basketball to have young guys at, and he's got a ton of them. What have you seen with them in terms of their growth this year, being so young, and now they're turning into such smart ball handlers and decision makers?
Well, you know, when they came to Kentucky, everybody knew they were a one and done. There was just no question. They were coming here for 1 year, they were going to make a run at a championship, and then they were going to get out. But point guards in Cal's system, historically, they struggle a little bit. I mean, and Cal talks about it. You go back to when you had Derrick Rose, Tyreek Evans. You know, these guys can struggle a little bit at times. Marcus Teague on that championship team, he didn't really get it until through the SEC season. And I think for Andrew Harrison, the point guard, he kind of went through that phase where he really didn't understand what he needed to do in this offense to help the team. Aaron Harrison, who's the shooting guard, he obviously can shoot, but he went through a little ups and downs a little bit, and I think both of them lost some confidence. And as much as Cal has kind of helped them, I'll tell you where they turned around. Their dad came up to visit them after the regular season was over, right before the conference tournament, and basically set them down and told them, look, I don't care if you go pro or not. I don't care if you come back next year. I don't care if you come back for 2 years. Just forget about all the pressures outside of basketball and just go out and play. And they've done that. They've played with a lot. They've played looser. They've played with more confidence. And now, when everybody thought they would probably be back next year, I think now they're back in the conversation. They probably will leave now after this season and go pro.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's probably a valid point. I mean, they've started to play so well and so smart. But before we get into a little bit of Julius Randle, because obviously he's kind of the headliner, tell me if I'm wrong that when I watched Kentucky, which I probably watched about 10 or 11 games this year with Wildcats, Am I wrong to think that at times James Young actually looks like he's the best player on the court wearing blue and white? Is that a bad assessment? Is it just always Julius Randle, or am I wrong about that?
No, there's no doubt. I mean, that's why James Young is considered by most to be a top 12 draft pick. He's got a great shot. He can get to the rim. He's a defensive liability early in the season, but he has really come on now where he's playing pretty good defense. They put him on Stauskas a lot in the second half, and Stauskas only had 6 points in the second half in that game on Sunday. He's a horrible passer. I mean, he may be the worst passer that's ever played Kentucky basketball, but he definitely has proven himself to be a great NBA player.
Yeah, you know, like you said, I obviously watched the Michigan game. He looked great that whole half. Stauskas is obviously, you know, Big Ten Player of the Year, hell of a player. Talk a little bit about Julius Randle because, you know, as a Kansas fan, there was so much hype about Wiggins this year. And in my assessment of their team, I thought Embiid was maybe the more pivotal player. What have you seen this year in terms of watching Randle and everything that he's brought to the table for Calipari?
He's just an animal. I mean, he is about to break the school record for most double-doubles in a season, which is held by Dan Issel, which that's like God-level status here at Kentucky, the career scoring leader. He's just been an unbelievable force on the boards all year long. He could, on any other team, you know, he'd probably average 25 points and 12 rebounds a game. It's just at teams this year in the SEC doubled down on him, tripled down on him, and when that happened to him, he would almost relax and like, well, nothing I can do. Throw his hands up like, well, I can't do anything here. I'm getting double-teamed and triple-teamed. Now, here in this march that they've got on, he's I don't know, it's just become more aggressive. All of them, just the confidence that they've got in their game has just been escalated. And I think, like we said, a lot of it goes to what Cal has kind of been preaching to them all year long.
Yeah, you know, before we get into a little bit of the Wisconsin game, I mean, where would you rank these freshmen this year? I mean, in terms of Randle, Wiggins, Embiid, Gordon, Ennis, guys like that, I tend to lean towards Randle and Parker being the two most impressive I've seen. What are your thoughts on some of those guys in terms of where they rank in your mind?
I think we might have lost them. We just got to call the drop. Maybe we'll get him to call back in. Maybe you angered him.
By talking about Kansas.
Once you heard that, he had his mic on the dump button. Hopefully we'll get him back, you know, and I think we do have him back here, and we'll go out to him. Ryan, we get you back?
Yeah. Welcome to the wonderful world of Kentucky cell service at times, so that's my apology. Lost my cell there.
No problem, buddy. So, Danny, you were about to ask a question, are you?
Yeah, I was just curious what you thought about where some of these freshmen across the country rank. I mentioned how I think Randle and Parker are the two best I've seen clear cut in my mind. But where do you rank them with guys like Ennis and Gordon, Wiggins, Embiid, some of those guys?
Well, it's a great class. I mean, we saw it, you know, when they were McDonald's All-Americans last year, and the NBA scouts were salivating already, couldn't wait to get their hands on some of these guys. I mean, Andrew Wiggins is just an unbelievable talent. And to him to be in this class where we would be saying the same thing about Jabari Parker, we'd be saying the same things about Julius Randle. I mean, it's unbelievable that this many talented players, can't miss prospects, are in one class. And that's why a lot of these NBA teams, their fan bases are hoping they start throwing games so, you know, maybe they can get, you know, Wiggins next year. Randle, I think he's one of these guys, like Parker, like what you say about Wiggins, that they can step on the floor right now and play because they're physical enough and they've got the game where they can step on the floor and play right now. Now, some of these other guys, you know, Embiid, I think obviously he's definitely going to be a great player. But does he have the physicality to play in the NBA right now? You know, I don't know. He's still going to be one of the top five picks, I'm sure, but I don't know if he's got it. Ennis, I love his game. I mean, I got to see him a lot this year. I love his game. I wish Kentucky had a guy like that on his team. But then there's guys like James Young. You know, he's going to be a lottery pick. The Harrison twins, they've now played their way, I think, in the conversation to be first-round draft picks. All this entire freshman class, Gordon out in Arizona. You know, he doesn't get talked as much, but he's still as talented as anybody, I think.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think Gordon kind of gets that East Coast bias that works against him. You know, he's a tremendous player out there. You know, speaking of teams that played Arizona, what do you think about this matchup with Wisconsin? What are some keys? I mean, obviously you got to handle Frank Kaminsky, Sam Decker, Ben Bruss, Trayvon Jackson. They got some great players. You got to get the game going up and down a little bit. What are some other keys you might see in terms of being able to beat the Badgers?
Well, Kaminsky's he's the wild card, obviously, because he's a post player that can go outside on the perimeter, and that's where Kentucky misses Willie Cauley-Stein. I mean, he's the one guy that could do that, that could guard Kaminsky in the post and out on the perimeter. If Kentucky goes with Dakari Johnson, he's one of those big butt players. You know, he's a post guy. He can't guard Kaminsky out on the perimeter. Well, if Kentucky goes with Marcus Lee, who was double zero that came in the Michigan game and had all those putback dunks, yeah, he could guard Kaminsky on the perimeter, but he can't guard Kaminsky in the post. This is a game for Willie Cauley-Stein. You know, he's not going to play. Kentucky keeps trying to throw it out there that we hope he can play. Maybe he can play. He's not going to play. And that's where that's where Wisconsin can definitely take advantage in the basketball game, because I think other position for position, Kentucky wins the battle.
Well, I do agree with you there. Do you think without Cauley-Stein in the lineup, because it's such a catch-22, because Wisconsin appears outwardly at least as though they'd be the kind of team that you would want to press, but then you see teams that press them, and Arizona did a little bit, and it just turns into layups. Do you think that's something maybe Calipari goes through, maybe a little bit smaller lineup trying to really speed them up? Or do you think he kind of sits back and says, you know, we're going to kind of have to play a shell defense here, see if we can shut down Kaminsky and make him shoot from the outside rather than give us seven-footer buckets inside?
Yeah, you know, Cal's not a press guy. It's just not something that he likes to do, especially with this team. Now, with that said, I think they're definitely going to try to push the tempo and push it as much as they can, since Wisconsin's one of those teams, you know, tries to muddy it up and slow it down as much as possible. I know the brief comments that Cal kind of said to us yesterday was that, you know, he thinks he's got the quickness and the perimeter and the guards and the players to push Wisconsin and make them uncomfortable. That's what he said. He goes, we need to make Wisconsin uncomfortable by making them play a little more pressure or up-tempo more than they want to. But to answer your question, will they go small? They could. Julius Randle, and then they play Alex Poitras, and then Young, Twin, and Twin. We saw that lineup some against Louisville after Willie Cauley-Stein got hurt, and we saw it against Michigan. But the whole wild card is Kaminsky. I just don't know what Kentucky can do to try to really neutralize him if he plays as well as he did this past weekend, for sure.
Yeah, Ryan, this is Mike again. You know, the Vegas line last I saw has got Kentucky laying 1.5. Does that sound about right to you? I mean, almost a pick 'em game with a slight edge to Kentucky?
I would say so. I mean, I was surprised. They had Louisville as a 5-point favorite. That was a little high. I think they had Michigan as a 5-point favorite to start with, and I thought that was high. When you just looked at the matchups, Kentucky matched up so well with those guys, and I almost feel that way against Wisconsin. I still feel like – and let me back up. Vegas was dead on Kentucky most of the season, especially during the SEC season. They'd make some spreads. I'm like, what are they talking about? And they'd be dead on. So even though they may have missed the last couple, Kentucky has covered, I think, their last 5 or 6 games in a row, if I'm not mistaken. And so a point and a half. I mean, I like Kentucky's matchup with Wisconsin, just outside of Kaminsky. When you look position for position, which is what I like to do, just look at matchups, I just don't think Wisconsin's got the guys, the athletes that can match up with 6'5 Andrew Harrison at point guard and a 6'7 slasher that can shoot and drive to the basket like James Young, and they sure don't have anybody that can match up with Julius Randle.
Yeah, I mean, for me as a more casual basketball fan, other than rooting for UConn and all, that's what I see from just watching the tournament. I find that it's a great matchup for Kentucky.
And I felt like the LA against Wichita State, and they won the game. I felt that way against Louisville. They won the game. I felt that way against Michigan, even though I thought they were really going to miss Willie Cauley-Stein against Michigan. Somehow Marcus Lee, this little-used McDonald's All-American freshman, came off the bench and had the game of his life. Matter of fact, he walked into class this week, guys, and got a standing ovation in his marketing class. And then the professor proceeded to talk about him throughout the class because Marcus Lee was the number one trend on Twitter during the Michigan-Kentucky game the other day. He stepped up at the right time and did the things they needed to do from him, and they're going to need it again, I think, against Wisconsin. I think he's going to play a lot, especially because Dakari, like I said, Dakari's a big butt guy. He can't play a whole game. He's going to have to sit down quite a bit, and Marcus Lee's going to have to get those minutes.
All right, Ryan. We really appreciate your time. Obviously, any of our listeners out there can follow you at Ryan LeMond on Twitter. Where else can our folks check you out?
Well, our morning show, Kentucky Sports Radio, we're on 10 to 12 Eastern. We're on 25 different stations across Kentucky. It's a great show. It's a fan-driven show. We have a lot of great callers that call in every morning. We also do the pregame show for Kentucky games and the postgame show. And, of course, you know, around here, we're like, you know, Alabama football and Kentucky basketball. The entire psyche of this depends on how some 18-, 19-year-old kids are going to do this weekend. So it could be a very fun weekend around here, or it could be a sad, depressing weekend where they're going to go out and break stuff probably when the game's over.
Well, I'll tell you this. We'll all be rooting for them in the first game, but if they're meeting up with UConn in the finals, I'll have to turn my cap to you. All right, buddy?
Well, I picked UConn to beat Florida, actually, in my brackets that we just did, our Final Four brackets. So I think we could see another Kentucky-UConn matchup like they did, you know, in the Final Four in 2011 when Kimba Walker's team beat Kentucky in the Final Four. I think this time they may meet for the championship. What do you think?
You know what? That's what I'm hoping. I actually had UConn in the Final Four and losing to Florida, which, you know, all of our fans are all over me at this point. Now, I got this far, and I didn't take it all the way. But I would love to see a Kentucky-UConn final. I think it'd be, you know, you've got the star power on both teams. You obviously, we have Shabazz Napier here, who is reaching Kimba status in the state. And, you know, it's getting there, and that would just be a fantastic final. I'll tell you what. If we meet up, we'd love to have you on next week again and hear from you after a UConn national championship.
Call me anytime, guys. I look forward to it. It should be a fun weekend for sure down in Dallas.
I think so. It'll be fun either way. Well, I really appreciate it, Ryan. Thank you again. That's Ryan LeMond, KentuckySportsRadio.com. Appreciate your time.
All right, guys. We'll take care. We'll see you.
All right. I mean, that guy knows his Kentucky basketball. And to be on the radio talking Kentucky basketball in Kentucky, I mean, it's like being Michael Kay up in New York. You know what I mean?
There's something – I mean, I know how filthy college athletics can be, but there's something, like, just wholesome and cool about those kind of states.
Oh, yeah.
Indiana hoops or Alabama football or, you know, whatever you want to go to. That's just – that's big time.
Yeah.
That guy's got to be listened to by a lot of people. They're crazy about it.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? For like, as big as UConn is in Connecticut, it is nothing. Because you have so many things to root for. You know, depending on your part of the state, you've got the Boston sports to root for. You're down this side of the state, you've got the New York sports to root for. And it's cool that Connecticut really all we've got is UConn. But, I mean, it's a drop in the bucket. I mean, now it's big.
And
Quinnipiac hockey, which we're going to have the Quinnipiac assistant calling up. Maybe we'll just ask Scotty Barella about the women's hockey team.
Let's just talk hockey.
Let's just get Scotty Barella on the horn.
Absolutely.
It's all right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get back to Neil. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Mike, come on! Mike,
what is your deal,
oh,
man?
Oh, come on, man. You've been riding me all day.
Mike, you're playing like Betty White out there.
That's not what your girlfriend said.
Oh. Baby!
Whoa.
Eat a Snickers. Better?
Better.
Hey!
That hurts.
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfies.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys, thanks again for the call from Greg LeMond, talking a little Kentucky hoops. Neil, I mean, you really don't have a dog in this fight here. I mean, what are you making of the Kentucky matchup first and then the UConn matchup?
Well, I was the one point I was going to make before we went into the interview was the two teams that Florida lost to this year were Wisconsin and UConn. So, you know, I obviously have Florida winning a bunch of my brackets, the majority of my brackets. You know, I think, you know, UConn is sneaky. Sneaky good, and historically they've been a really successful team, but for some reason they keep getting overlooked each year. And you know, I was listening to Colin Cowherd, and he was mentioning that, you know, if you look at, everyone considers Duke basketball to be kind of like the New York Yankees of college NCAA basketball, but Duke's been ousted in the first round a couple times, but you know, the past 15 years UConn's made it to the Final Four what, five times or something like that. So I think Florida's going to have their hands full with UConn, but on the flip side of things, it's just tough. The Kentucky game is tougher to kind of predict because, you know, they had a subpar season by their standards, and Wisconsin is kind of like UConn in that they're sneaky good and able to get out of that that one region with Arizona, I think. Do we really want to see a UConn-Wisconsin national championship? It kind of makes me groan a little bit. But, I could very easily see Kentucky upsetting Wisconsin. And I could very easily see UConn sticking it to Florida. I don't know that they'll win, but I think they'll keep it close.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it wouldn't even be an upset for Kentucky to win. I mean, they're a favorite even though they're an 8th seed. Back to your point about UConn, I kind of wonder, that being a guy from New Jersey, I mean, obviously UConn's huge around here. I get the sense that there is no national following behind UConn basketball, although clearly there is with Kentucky, Kansas. I mean, Dan here's a Kansas fan. Duke, you're going to find Duke, UNC fans, even UCLA fans all over the country. UConn, maybe because they're a newer program to have a lot of success, but they've been having success for over 20 years now. Did you get, I mean, in New Jersey, did you know anybody that was like a diehard UConn fan?
I mean, no, not really. I mean, you look at what most colleges that are successful that we follow around here, it's like you might go as far as to say like St. John's, Seton Hall. But, yeah, UConn's a little bit out of our reach in terms of, you know, there's just a bunch of colleges that are closer by that, might not have the prowess of the Huskies, but that can still be successful and that have a stronger following. So, you know, and in most cases, UConn's a rival of those teams. So, I mean, it makes sense that New Jersey is not going to get full force behind UConn. It was actually interesting to be at the bars and watch how people were responding to the UConn game versus like the Dayton games, you know, where Dayton was pulling out wins and, you know, people were getting more excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at the Final Four matchups, I've heard a lot of people mention the Wisconsin-UConn wins over Florida. And as someone who watches copious amounts of college basketball, I don't see any correlation between the Florida team that was beaten by those teams and the Florida team that's on like a 30-game winning streak now. I mean, I know it's only a pair of losses, but Florida is so different now that I think the only bright spot that can come out of that is UConn looks over that game film and they can maybe take a sliver of confidence, like, you know, we can beat these guys. I'm not saying UConn doesn't believe they can beat them, but what else does it really do for them? I mean, when you look at the comeuppance now of a guy like Wilmington, you see Prather playing the way he's playing. Patrick Young's an absolute animal inside. You get pulled down like 12 rebounds in the last game. These guys were not peaking back in December when they had those losses. I mean, they just weren't. Connecticut, what are they getting, like 6.5 or something like that? I think they're
six and a half
point dogs. I think it's a good bet to take the points because of how great UConn's playing and because of how lethal Napier is. In terms of the other game, I keep harping on it in terms of Wisconsin, but if you can just get the game going up tempo just a little bit, you take them completely out of their comfort zone. I mean, that's a continuity offense. That's a pack line defense. I mean, they want to do everything in the half court. Kentucky is so good, so athletic, and now they're playing so smart, and I've said it 2 or 3 weeks in a row now with Calipari's team, that I think they can get that game going up and down. I would not be the least bit surprised if Kentucky buried them, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was a close game. But I don't see Wisconsin having the firepower, the athleticism, the depth to just beat them to death. I don't see that happening in any possible way.
Has Wisconsin, you've been down on Wisconsin's whole tournament. Has Wisconsin started, is part of your trepidation to not just come out and say Kentucky's going to bury him because you've been burned a little bit beyond? You getting a little gun shy here? Because I know deep down you want to say Kentucky's going to bury him.
No, I really don't. I'm the first one to admit when I'm wrong. I was completely wrong about Wisconsin. I know they come out of a great league.
You were dead wrong about Michigan. They were killing you on our way.
Yeah, I mean, apparently there's a lot of big Blue fans around here. But, the thing with Wisconsin is they play a brand of basketball that I like to watch. I mean, that's the thing about it. I like that kind of half-court offense. I just don't think it's something that translates into the NCAA tournament in terms of a lengthy run. You don't see a lot of teams win like that.
Yeah, you must see
great regular seasons that way.
Yeah, and you saw Butler make two runs to the championship game back-to-back, running a very similar type of system. But even still, when they had guys like Haywood, the guy with the Jets.
Gordon Hayward.
Guys like that that could get out in the open floor a little bit. They had the big guy who shot threes. I mean, they had some diversity there. I see Wisconsin as a team that if it gets into the 70s, it becomes a really difficult game for them, even in Big Ten play. I mean, that's where it gets into the 70s and it becomes an infinitely tougher game the way that Bo Ryan wants to coach and run that team. That's the only reason I think it's a good matchup for Kentucky. I think Florida would be a worse matchup for Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin would be a worse matchup for Florida.
Yeah.
Because Florida hasn't been able to really score that much, and they play more of a half-court game, although they try to run and it hasn't been that effective. But Kentucky gets up and down, and they'll take the shots. They'll take contested shots. They'll just speed the game up. I think it's a really tough one. Like I said, I think Kentucky, if there is a blowout, it is Kentucky handing down the beatdown. I don't think Wisconsin has the firepower to do to them what they did to, like, Baylor or something like that. I just think Kentucky's got way more weapons than Baylor has.
Neil, overall, you haven't been on the show in a couple weeks. Overall, I mean, is this the kind of NCAA tournament you like with a lot of upsets and, you know, you got a 7 and an 8 seed in the Final Four? You went into the tournament not really with a clear-cut favorite. I mean, Florida was the overall number one seed. Is this the kind of tournament you like, or do you like it when it's just all heavy hitters there in the Final Four?
No, I mean, I definitely root for upsets, but the number of upsets was a little alarming, I guess, you know, because it was just like, you know, everything just didn't seem right in the world. It just seemed like there was, like, the seedings were just completely off. And, you know, I feel like, but, again, it adds for interesting brackets down the line. I mean, you know, I don't, you know, you never want to see the same four teams in the finals every year. So I think it's a good mix of teams. You know, you got the perennial favorite in Florida. You have the two kind of dark horses in, you know, in my opinion, Wisconsin and UConn. And then you have the kind of, you know, the story behind Kentucky is like it's a storied franchise that, you know, constantly losing players freshman, sophomore year. So people kind of count them out, and they had a subpar year, and then they're able to step it up. So, I mean, all the storylines are there for a nice Final Four. You know, I mean, I don't know that you can really ask for a better one. I mean, you got teams, you get the Cinderella story, which I know a lot of people are not too keen on using the term Cinderella anymore, but you had the Daytons, the schools like Dayton that were making their presence known. So all in all, I mean, it seems like each year it just gets better and better.
Yeah, I don't think it could miss. I think the structure, especially in the first round, it can't miss. It's going to be entertaining. You're not going to have a dud. I mean, that's the only difference between, you know, we talk about the two major sporting events in America that are clear and above everybody else is the Super Bowl and the NCAA tournament. And you could have a dud in the finals of the, you know, of the NCAA tournament, but you're never going to have a dud for a tournament. And nothing's ever going to match that first Thursday and Friday of the tournament. You could have a dud in the Super Bowl, kind of like we had this year, but you're never going to miss. There's never going to be a swing and a miss on those first 2 days. It's always going to be exciting. What do you think, Dean?
Well, the first 2 days, I think, are the best 2 days of sports in the entire country for me. I mean, I'm not saying that that's a fact. That's just the way I feel about it. I even look at it in terms of the championship UConn won with Kemba Walker over Butler. I heard a lot of people saying the next day that was the worst basketball game they ever saw.
It was super low score.
I thought it was one of the best basketball games I've ever seen in my life. I mean, and it wasn't exciting in terms of, geez, there's another alley-oop, but there's a guy made his third straight three-pointer. I mean, it was low-scoring. It was grinded out. But it's the theater of it that makes it so exciting. You get a close national championship game. I don't care if it's 35-35 with 10 seconds ago. It's exciting. You know, there's really, I agree with you, there's no way to miss with March Madness. You'll get a bad game. There's always bad games. But by and large, it is the one sport that just hits the nail on the head every single time. I mean, I don't see anything close to it. For me, I mean,
yeah.
I know you guys are huge NFL fans, but unless the Vikings are in the Super Bowl, I don't really get worked up about it.
Neil, what do you think about this? For whatever reason, maybe this is the first year because I got so many other things going on like in my life, but those, you know, that gap between the rounds seems to like last forever, and I forget all about what's going on. Like after the craziness of the first weekend, it's like, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday happen, and then you're like, oh, my God, basketball's back on? It seems like it was forever. I'm sure Danny's not the same way because you live and die by this stuff, but what do you get that sense, Neil? Like, well, you know, those 3 days feel like a lifetime.
Yeah, and they definitely lose momentum, but, I mean, what's the alternative? You know what I mean? I don't know that they could – I don't know that they necessarily want to continue day after day after day when it's in the weekdays. You start to run into the economy takes a hit at some point, Michael. You know, I mean, like those first two, like Santa said, those first 2 days, I don't know that anything in the sports world really compares to them because it's like the zero work gets done at the office. I mean, you know, people were asking me at like 10 a.m. when I got in, like, hey, you want to get a beer and watch the games? I'm like, no, guys, I just got in the office. What's going on?
Yeah. No, I know. It is. It's an amazing phenomenon, those first 2 days. Everybody, women, children, adult men, adult women. I mean, and like, you know, everybody's into it. We're going to bring on now to the Tucci Lumber Hotline one of the major figures here on Fox Sports 1, former St. John's great. That's Tariq Turner. Tariq, you with us?
I'm here. I'm in the building.
All right, man. Tariq, good to hear from you again.
What's happening?
Before we get into the tournament, I just got to say, I was thoroughly impressed by the Big East tournament. For as much as everybody downplayed the new Big East and all the rest, that tournament, and I'm not just saying that because you're on the air, because I said it a couple weeks ago, was fantastic to watch.
It was. You know, I think people were curious to see how it would play out with the new Big East kind of forming its own league. And including myself, I was curious too, but I think it was a success for the first year. You know, great crowds. You know, Seton Hall kind of set the tone by beating Villanova in the first day, and you know, it carried over. I thought the final was great with Creighton and Providence. You had Player of the Year Doug McDermott playing against the underdog Providence with a great guard like Bryce Cotton. So. And Providence won the game, which is great because it put Providence in position to go to the tournament as the 14th. So I thought it was good. I mean, the crowds were excellent. The Garden was rocking like it always has been in previous years. And it's going to take some time for the conference to really develop its own identity like it did in the previous years. But I think it was a good start.
Yeah, I mean, the talk is that the Big East will never be what it was, and that might be true, but I think, you know, you've got a sports network devoted to the Big East, which I think is huge recruiting-wise because, it's, you know, you're going to get a nationwide fan base. Then you have the excitement of the tournament this year, big teams playing in the tournament. I mean, do you think that there's going to be this law? I mean, I think the Big East can just, within a couple of years, be a powerhouse conference.
Well, I feel good about it, and I agree with you. I think it's going to take some time. And, you know, it's funny because people forget that the original Big East, as great as it was, and in my opinion, it was the best basketball conference in the country. It took 6 years for it to really take off. And it's going to be the same way with this conference. I mean, it's great to have the partnership with Fox Sports and the commitment from them, but it's not going to happen overnight. You know, I think, you know, getting four teams in the tournament was a good start. Getting some national exposure, you know, every game being televised is great as well. But, you know, if people have amnesia sometimes and they think it's going to happen right away and you're going to get eight teams in the tournament. The original Big East, like I said, it took 6 years for it to really take off and become dominant. And I think it's going to take maybe not 6 years, but it's going to take at least a few years to kind of develop and build out the way, you know, people want it to.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I hope so. Even with UConn not in it, I still find myself rooting for the Big East and watching a lot of the games. So, you know, I hope you're right. Now, let's talk about UConn. I mean, when
yeah,
you came on
let's talk about UConn,
season,
yeah.
Let's talk about Kevin Ollie. If you had said you thought he was a very good coach before the season when you came on, and, I mean, he flew under the radar. This guy still doesn't get any attention for the great job he's done, taking over for a legend. I mean, imagine the guy that comes and takes over for Coach K. You know, being the next guy in there. This guy's taking over for a legend, a guy who built a program, and it just hits the ground running and got his team in the Final Four. Why is he not getting more attention for the job he's done in such a short time?
Well, I'll start off by saying I couldn't be happier for a coach than I am for Kevin Ollie. He's a personal friend. I played against him. I know what kind of person he is. I know what kind of connection he has with these kids. and the way he's been able to move from a player to the sideline with very little coaching experience, very difficult to do that. I mean, you don't see too many guys do that, let alone take the reins from a Hall of Famer, as you mentioned, in Coach Calhoun, and just develop his own identity, his own style of play, and go to the Final Four. I think from now until this weekend, he's going to get all the positive press and the attention that he's been deserving of. And he's not a guy that really seeks that, but you got to give him credit. I mean, his second year as a head coach, he goes to the Final Four with a team that I don't think anyone expected to go that far, including myself, at the beginning of the year. So he's done a phenomenal job. You know, I think he's, you know, got a lot ahead of him, and obviously his greatest skill to me has been his ability to connect with his team with a positive mindset and get them to play free and not dwell on the negatives. He's such a positive guy. You know, you look at the transformation of Shabazz, who was a little moody, a little emotional early on in his career where it distracted his game, and then Boatwright settling down, DeAndre Daniels getting more confidence. Those three right there alone have been huge. And you know, his experience as a former pro, you know, I know if I played for a guy that played in the league for 13 years, you know, I would give him the utmost respect and, you know, obviously follow his lead. So it's all coming together, and I'm happy for them.
Well, how much do you think – I mean, clearly, Shabazz Napier has become one of the best, if not the best, point guards in the country. And, I mean, I've watched the guy from his freshman year, and I remember the mistakes he used to make, the just dumb passes he'd make in big, crucial spots, it seemed. I mean, you saw the potential. How much of his progression do you attribute to Kevin Ollie, and how much of it is just a natural maturing process?
Well, he's always been talented. I mean, you remember when he played as a freshman with Kemba and they won the whole thing. This was a kid that had a lot of talent, a lot of upside. But what I think Kevin Ollie's been able to do is teach him how to be consistently great in terms of knowing when to take the game over, when to get his teammates involved, how to be a leader, how to be vocal in a way that is positive to his teammates with good body language. Because as a sophomore and freshman, he would pout sometimes, and I think that affected his team and his own personal game. And I think Kevin Ollie is the kind of guy who he'll go out and practice and participate in the drills. Like, he'll actually participate as if he's still a player. And show Napier how to use spacing on the screen and roll as a point guard, how to, you know, break a trap, you know, when there's a full court press. And to have that as your head coach, a former point guard, a veteran point guard, you can't help but to think that that's helped Napier, and I know it has, because Napier has gotten better as a game manager, not just a scorer, but just managing the game, knowing when to pick his spots, knowing how to get his teammates involved. There's a direct connection between his own talent and then Kevin Ollie's tutelage as an NBA point guard.
So, Reese, this is Dan. I get in some trouble, I guess, around here for not being as high on Napier as some of the UConn people are, although I think he's an absolutely unbelievable player. Do you think it's this clear cut that he's head and shoulders above guys like Cotton or DeAndre Payne or Joseph Young out at Oregon? I mean, is it clear cut to you that he is the best lead guard in the country, or do you see those guys being in the same class as him?
I think it's clear cut. I'll tell you why, because look at what he's done. I mean, UConn really isn't an overly talented team, you know, with all respect, but, you know, he's dominated from start to finish. He's made, you know, so many plays for his team. There's only a few teams that are left that have gone this far that I don't want to say single-handedly, but, like, without him, the team would be nowhere near where they are. Can't say that for anyone else. You look at the teams that are left, like a Florida, per se, great team, well-coached, but they don't have that one guy that can just take over a game. Maybe Will Buchanan a little bit, but Napier, to me, as a lead guard, I mean, he's first-team All-American, so, you know, there's a reason he was picked at, and I think he deserves it. And, you know, looking at all the guards this year, to me, he stands out as certainly one of the top two or three guards in the country.
Well, you're going to get me in even more trouble now, Creed, that, you know, you disagree with me. But, I mean, that's okay. I understand where you're coming from.
All right, Dan.
You mentioned Florida. I mean, just my last question for you is, you see a team like them that has guys, veterans like Wilbekin, Frazier, Young. Do you see an importance in that they have these guys that hang around? Because then you see a team like Kentucky with all young guys, and they're in the Final Four. So how much weight would you put on, you know, having these veteran players, or is it just a matter of how good those veterans are?
No, it's more than that. I think it's a great point you bring up. I think what's come to light in this tournament is that teams with experience sometimes have an advantage, and in this case, I think that's been a big reason why Florida's been so successful. They're a senior-laden team. These guys know what it's like to play in big moments. They've been to three Elite Eights. They know what it's like. They've been there, and now they're getting a chance to close out their careers on a high note, and that experience translates to wins. I mean, how many freshmen do you know can go on a, you know, 19, 20 game win streak? I mean, I just don't see the concentration, the maturity. I don't see it happening. I mean, as a freshman, it's very hard to keep that kind of focus, that kind of concentration, and that kind of, you know, that hunger to stay at it every game and not have a drop off. And that's why this has been such an amazing streak for the Gators. I mean, they're a team that wins with the group. It's not like a single guy that stands out. You don't see a lot of 25, 30-point performances. And, you know, their experience, I think, is a direct result of, you know, them winning and believing in each other and having that cohesive, you know, style of play, along with the fact that Billy Donovan is – you know, in my opinion, a top, you know, top three coach in the country. That certainly helps. So I would much rather have seniors, personally, like a Florida team, than a bunch of freshmen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I just, you know, you wonder whether it gets overplayed, but I'm with you. I mean, on paper and like, you know more about basketball than both of us combined. I'm with you. You get a group of seniors, I'll take them any day of the week. Well, Tariq, I really appreciate your time calling in on a Wednesday night. Can't thank you
no
enough.
Problem.
We got Scotty Burrell calling up in about 10 minutes. Another contemporary.
I'll
of
tell
yours,
Scotty
so
I said
let him know
up,
you.
Man.
I definitely will. He's gonna have Quinnipiac in that tournament one of these days.
All right, have a good one.
All
good
right,
luck, guys, with the Huskies.
All right, thank you very
all
much.
Right.
That's
thanks.
Fox Sports 1, Tariq Turner. Really appreciate his time. He's one of the real good guys out there. You know what I mean? And we get people all the time that will, you know, turn on Fox Sports 1. They're like, that's the guy that calls into your show. I'm like, yeah. Close personal friend of Dan Santarelli.
Yeah. You know what I want to
He doesn't agree with you, but neither does anybody on our website, so it doesn't matter.
That's all right. I mean, that's what makes me think I'm doing something right, right? That people are disagreeing with all much other than Tariq, who I respect his opinion. But I'm curious to know from a guy like him. I just saw Jimmy Dykes, who covers SEC basketball for ESPN. He just took the Arkansas job. And I've listened to a million games this guy's done. I never heard him mention coaching. He just takes the Arkansas job. They offered to him. He's going to coach in the SEC now. I'd be curious one
who's
day.
Who's the basketball guy that just took the Auburn job, too? The Thomas
Bruce
Day.
Pearl.
Yeah, Bruce Pearl just took the
Auburn.
Yeah, he's
only had, like, a rap sheet with his double-A sanctions. And then, they had that show-pause thing with him and everything else. But I'd be curious because Tariq, you know, like most of those experts, I mean, you see a guy like Jade Williams on ESPN and stuff breaking down those games. If those guys are ever interested, you know? I mean, we talked to Salisbury about that and some other guys, and it's just always a curious thing for me, like, you have such a cozy job doing what he does.
I don't know why anybody.
I don't either, dude. I listen to him do the Big East games with Austin Crozier, the pregame stuff, and I just go, why the hell would you ever leave that? Why would you never lose a game? Like, you just
I know.
Sit there and go,
always,
right?
Yeah.
And
you're
like,
always
going
to go to sleep at night. You're
right.
Like, well, whatever.
And if you're wrong, you're like us. You just make it up that you never said it.
All right, let's take another quick break. We come back. We'll wrap up our talk about the NCAA tournament. We'll have Scotty Burrell calling in. So stick around. I would try to say sports guy.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging, knees bending, head bobbing to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me a
doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
You're
so crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really, really bad dancer.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys, thanks again to Tariq Turner, Fox Sports 1. Just a quick update. Brooklyn is getting run out of Madison Square Garden right now. They're down 16. I still got a hunch they're going to come back. They were down 20-plus at some point in the first quarter. I mean, first half. I think they're going to come back and win this game. They're down 70-54 right now, about 5 minutes to go. Neil, you watching that game? What's on in the Hoboken studio right now? We're watching the Mets. What are you watching over there, Neil?
Yeah, I'm watching the Mets.
Sounds like it. I mean, this is depressing. Like, your article today hit it right on the head. I'm the most optimistic Mets fan there is. But it just gets to the point where you're like, man, they get this lead against Strasburg, and you get a stupid home run from Brown. You're all excited, and they bring in two relief pitchers who throw eight consecutive balls. They blow the lead. They get the lead on a Lagares home run, and then they give it right back, and then they give up a four spot in the 10th. It's just, God, Neil, can we catch a break?
Bartolo Colon is 5'11", 283 pounds.
He looks big, but he doesn't look that big. You know how big that is?
That's what he's listed as in the program. In the program, they have him. That's his listed weight and height. And he's holding his own right now tonight.
Give you an extra inch, shed a couple pounds. They helped him out. He did just say the best player in baseball, Bryce Harper.
I don't know. I'm not saying – I don't want to get people to get the wrong idea here. It's not – and I'm not saying I'm not going to follow the New York Mets. If there's one team I'm going to follow in Major League Baseball, which in my mind is really just like screwed the pooch over the past couple of years, it's going to be the New York Metropolitans. I'm not changing allegiances or anything like that. I'm just saying in terms of the emotional roller coaster, I am a robot from here until September. And then if they happen to clinch a wild card and I see them in the postseason, I'll turn it up a notch. But I can't get worked up game one. And I got worked up game one. Shouldn't happen.
I know, but it is, and they're still going to have me. I can't quit them, dude. I mean, as much as the Jets, destroy me and the Nets destroy me, the Mets are still my, overall favorite team, and I'll watch them and check the score every night, even if I'm not watching every game. It gets super. But, all right, let's get back to the NCAA tournament. We'll have plenty of time in the second hour to talk about baseball. We'll spend the majority of the hour doing that. But just to finish up our thoughts about the NCAA tournament, I mean, what did you think about what Tariq said about, the job Kevin Ollie's doing and Shabazz Napier being the clear-cut best point guard in the league? I like to think that, but I'm a UConn homer. I mean, you get that same sense, or are you on Danny's bandwagon where it's there, there's a group of them. They're all very good, Cotton and the rest, and they're all, they're a hair apart.
I mean, I haven't seen enough of them over the year to make a judgment call on that. I find it really curious that, as a casual college basketball fan that, I didn't really hear either name in terms of the national storyline, like national media coverage. I didn't hear either name. And then all of a sudden people are chirping about how Shabazz is like the best player in college basketball. And I mean, it's just interesting to see how the momentum has swayed so heavily in their favor. It's good to see. I mean, I guess it's the Ollie story, in my mind at least, is a little reminiscent of that Butler coach that's now coaching the Celtics, the young guy there. I forgot his name, but how he kind of they brought Butler to prominence. I mean, you got to feel good if you're a Huskies fan, but you do have a big, tall order ahead of you in Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as Napier goes, I mean, in UConn land, people have been telling everyone that who wants to listen to him that Shabazz Napier is not only the best point guard, but, and Danny's over here shaking his head, but the best player in the nation. You know that, Dan. I mean, you're surrounded by UConn fans. That's not a storyline that just started in the NCAA tournament. People have been saying this since week one of this season, that he's going to, and they were partially right. I mean, he played better than I thought he was going to. I mean, I was rooting for him. I didn't see this kind of season coming out of him. I didn't see this run that they've made here in the tournament.
No, I think if anybody did, they're either UConn fans or they're lying to you, because the UConn fans said the same thing about Ricky Moore. They said the same thing about Khalil Amin. I mean, every guy
loves
UConn's the best player in the world.
I mean, at a body type like Marcelo Cologne.
Like me. I'm disagreeing with Connecticut fans' homerism. I'm not disagreeing with Tariq Turner.
All we got here.
No. But Tariq Turner played the game way better than I ever did. He volleyed
guard, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But all I'm arguing is if take Joseph Young from like Oregon, the phenomenal talent. If he played here,
yeah,
UConn fans would say the same thing about him. That's all I'm saying. I love watching the Napier play. I really do. And I love watching Boatwright, I love watching DeAndre Daniels. I think they have a fantastic team. Kevin Ollie, right up there with Calipari for the best coaching job in the country this year. I mean, he's a superb coach. But you cannot tell me that if Iowa State had George Niang handling the ball, that they wouldn't have posted up DeAndre Kane on Napier and made him look silly.
Yeah.
Because Kane's the best post-up point guard in the country, hands down. And they didn't have anybody to get him the ball because they don't have another ball game.
Yeah.
That's what happened in that game. And I'm not taking anything away from UConn, because if it was my team, I wouldn't want you saying anything bad about them. God bless them. They won. They're in the Final Four. But to me, it is by like a hairline that he is better than maybe DeAndre Kane and Joseph Young. And I would even throw Bryce Cotton. If I think if Bryce Cotton was on this team, UConn fans would be gaga over him.
I mean, the thing is, you know, if Cotton from Providence played for UConn, they'd be a statue outside. I mean, he's that kind of electric type player. So I agree. I don't want my UConn homerism to come over the top on people. But
God bless you guys. I mean it. I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
Because it's not Coach Calhoun. I'm only kidding. We're going to go right out now. Speaking of Coach Calhoun, to the Tucci Lumber Hotline.
Yeah. We're going to bring on a UConn great here in Scott Burrell. Scott, are you with us?
Hello?
Hello?
This is Bobo.
Bobo, let me put you on hold 1 second, brother. I'll get right back to you. Sorry about that. We got a little miscommunication here on the line. We're going to get back to Bobo in a second. We got Scott Burrell called in and the call dropped, so hopefully we'll get him back in a minute. I think the thing with Kevin Ollie is, Neil, you know, you get a guy that takes over for an absolute legend like Calhoun. Anyone else, it's like you're setting yourself up for failure. Now, you could look at it and say that 1 year of probation kind of gave him this cover and this buffer to kind of figure things out under not this kind of big spotlight, and it kind of gave him an out if they weren't able to succeed while he's taking over, coming off of that, leaving the Big East. So I think that might have softened his landing a little bit, Neil. Do you get that sense? And maybe that's why he's not getting the huge publicity surrounding him?
Well, yeah, I mean, the pressure's off and the heat's off, you know, when it doesn't count, I guess. So, you know, I think that buffer period can definitely, you know, he can experiment more. He can play a little bit more loosely with the lineups and with the strategy and see, you know, experiment more. So, I you can say that helped.
I just honestly don't think it's the kind of high-profile job that has the spotlight on. I mean, I'm not knocking it. They got three national championships. I'm just telling you the fact.
Calhoun is one of the most successful,
absolutely,
decorated collegiate coaches in the last 50 years.
I said it last week. But you know, I think it was you, Mike, that alluded to it earlier. I mean, it's not Duke. It's not Kansas. It's not Kentucky. It's not Michigan State. It's just not. I mean, they have the three national championships. They have a lot of high-profile players that have come out of there. I mean, you look at a guy like Ray Allen. You look at Kevin Ollie was a guy who played in the pros. I mean, Ben Gordon, Mike's yelling from the other side of the room. So they've had a lot of players, but I don't think it is a program that sits under the heat lamp and everybody gets their magnifying glasses out and looks at it. I think, like you saw Steve Wojciechowski, Krzyzewski's assistant, take the Marquette job. I think had he waited and taken the Duke job, Krzyzewski wants to go 5 more years, he said. Mm-hmm. Had he taken the Duke job in 5 years, you would have seen an absolute, the biggest microscope ever built to see how one of his minions would have taken over that program. But Calhoun, we mentioned it last week, he deserves that kind of credit. He's got one less national championship than the great Coach K. I mean, that's all it is. And everybody's talking this week, if Donovan can win, that's his third. It's unbelievable. Well, Calhoun's sitting there with three in retirement, and no one talks about it. It's a remarkable job that Ollie's done, but it just isn't that kind of program that everybody stares at and goes, what is UConn going to do next? It really isn't. I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying, when Roy Williams left Kansas, Bill Self had to go through a vetting process that was like nothing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Now, Ollie comes in. I understand the cloak of darkness because of everything that happened with Calhoun and the academic stuff and everything that went on. But people just kind of forgot, like, hey, geez, here's a guy who went to school here, played in the pros, and no one cares.
Yeah.
Just don't care. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, like whoever succeeds, you know, Izzo out in Michigan State, it's going to be all you hear about, leading up into the season. And he didn't get that added pressure.
No.
You know what I mean, Neil? And I probably like, Neil, like you said, I mean, the sphere of UConn fans has not reached much past, like, Westchester County or, you know, Worcester, Massachusetts. It's not a very huge sphere of influence there. So maybe that's the case. And here it's a huge deal in Connecticut. Who's going to take over for Calhoun? And the rumors that Calhoun was going to BC was going to just devastate Connecticut fans.
You want to know who the guys on the truth?
Yeah, I do.
I was at O'Neill's Pub Sunday, watched the UConn game.
South North Connecticut.
Absolutely great establishment. I'm there watching the UConn game, surrounded by UConn fans. You know what? When UConn beat Michigan State, there was a momentary celebration. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The stretch run down the last like 2 minutes when they started making a lot of buckets and all their 18 straight free throws, whatever it turned out to be, it was a little celebration, and then everybody just kind of quieted down and had their drink.
What do you want to turn over cars in the parking lot?
No. But what I'm saying is, when you see the Uber programs, like the huge programs, the states go berserk.
Yeah,
they go berserk.
Like you see in Arizona, that one chick got like level. Neil, did you see that? Hopefully that comes up on your say what? I mean your. Do you see that chick outside? There's like riots going on. I think it was Arizona, and the police officer just tackled her over a bench.
It was Arizona, and I don't know that kind of stuff will happen at ASU, but I haven't watched it yet. I've heard a lot about it, and I'm interested to see the veracity and the force with which this dude takes down the girl. Because I mean, if you want to live in a gender neutral society and you want to riot, you got to keep your head on a swivel. That's rule number one.
And the clip I saw, unless I'm missing something, this girl was doing very little wrong. She was just standing there, like it didn't even feel like she was screaming at anybody. She was like talking, and this guy comes up and just blows her up, dude. She goes flying out of the screen. And Barstool Sports, the headline was just a woman gets decapitated at an Arizona riot. Because it looked like maybe this woman wouldn't make it through. It was insane. And the cop just like backed away and left the screen like, yeah, this is what happens in Arizona. Arizona's a tough state. Their law enforcement is no joke. They will kick you out of the country. They'll do whatever they need happen. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, as much as I love to visit, I think living there might end my life prematurely.
Yeah. That's it, man. All right. So, I mean, just to wrap up the NCAA tournament, Neil, I mean, where do you see it going? Who do you think's winning on Saturday, and then who's going to win on Monday?
I think UConn gives Florida everything that they got. Comes down to the final minute, but Florida is able to pull it out. It might even go into OT. I don't see the same happening in the Wisconsin-Kentucky game. I think Kentucky continues their, you know, quasi Cinderella ride. And I'd like to point out that I had Kentucky as one of my dangerous teams to watch. And I know Santa's rolling his eyes, but I had them as one of my dangerous teams to watch to go deep in the tourney, and look where they are now. They're about to take down the Badges.
Yeah, I know. They're right there. I mean, Danny, where do you see this weekend going?
Well, just to put a bow on my thought before, the only thing I was saying was I think there's so much focus on professional sports around here that even UConn fans don't get as excited about UConn's successes as we talked to Brian Lamont before, and you see what Kentucky's like, and there's a lot of states that are like that. That's the only thing I was saying about UConn. But I like Kentucky to beat Wisconsin. I think they beat them by probably like six. And I do like Florida over Connecticut. I think people going nuts about how Napier's going to dribble through this press like he's Calvin Murphy or something like that. It's not going to happen. there's been point guards that are outstanding point guards that have struggled with this press. He's going to need both, right? He's going to need guys like Giffey and Cuomo and all those guys to handle the ball. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tougher than people think it's going to be because they have such a great point guard. Will McKinn is outstanding defensively at the point. So I like Florida to win, but I do think if I was betting the game, I would take the points. And then I like Florida in the final. I didn't have them winning my bracket, but I would take Florida in this final.
UConn's taking it all down. All right. Well, while we wait to work out the technical difficulties with Mr. Burrell, Bobo's been waiting patiently. Great caller from Queens. I want to get out to him. I'm sure he's going to want to talk about the mess in there en route here to an 0-2 start. Bobo, are you still with us?
Yep, I'm still with you guys. And, yeah, I was at opening day. That was a tough loss. I think I reached for a few beers after that game. And it looks like again today.
So what was the mood? I'm sure you hit McFadden's up after the game, Bobo. What was the mood? Was it still just like, you know what, it's opening day, it's exciting? Or was it already like, same old mess? What was the mood at McFadden's?
It was, like, great to be here, but I was just thinking it was just, it's so early in the season.
That's what I'm hoping. I mean, you got to check out the article my man Neil wrote today about just how frustrating it is to be a Mets fan, and I know you're a lifer, Bobo, so you're with us. But, I mean, any hope here? I mean, look, they got more offense than you would have expected off a guy like Strasburg, and they still can't win. You got a good start at a G, and you still can't win. Then you got Bartolo Colon out there. You know, he's going to give you innings and give you quality starts, but I don't think he's going to repeat his numbers from last year. I mean, any hope this year? You're still sticking with your 95 wins, Bobo.
Yeah, I think we could do it. We just got to get on a roll. We can win a game right now early on, start winning early on. That's where it is. We got to get to a good start.
Yeah, I'm with you. Now, what do you think about the Parnell injury? It doesn't look good. I mean, they haven't officially said he needs surgery yet. But, I mean, it looks like we're staring at Valverde, El Papa Grande, as the closer. He looked good yesterday. So, I mean, people were clamoring for it before they even found out Parnell was hurt.
I'm just shocked he kept this a secret. It hits the streets, people. They just keep these injuries a secret like that.
I know. And they said, his velocity was down all spring, but nobody wanted to talk about it. And then, when you're a guy that throws a 100-mile-an-hour straight fastball, if that 100-mile-an-hour fastball becomes a 94-mile-an-hour fastball and it's that straight, it's going to go a long way.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping it goes well. I think Valverde will do a decent job as a closer.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I mean, he was not too long ago. He's not too many seasons removed from a perfect season there. Then he fell out of graces pretty quickly. Now, last thing I want to ask you, Bobo, and I think it's the question everybody wants to know. When are we going to see Noah Syndergaard, do you think? Are you hearing anything while you're at the stadium yesterday? June 1st? When do you think Noah Syndergaard's up in Queens?
I think he's going to be up in Queens by May.
I hope you're right. I think that if you find out he's coming up, I'm sure they're going to surround it around the home game. They're not going to waste that. You going to get tickets for that game no matter what or what?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get tickets to that game.
All right, hit me up on Twitter when you get those tickets. I'd like to go down there with you, brother. And I know we're going to see you for your birthday later this month, right?
Yep. Also, I'm on the quest to try. I'm hoping to get lucky at that drawing for the ONA Unmasked tickets.
Yeah, that's going to be crazy. So they're doing an Unmasked show. Where's it going to be at? Caroline's, I think, right? And Ronnie Bennington's going to interview him?
Yep, and fortunately it's one of those random drawing deals. And unfortunately this one, it isn't easy to get tickets. Like, you could just go and buy them.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to get on that too. I think Ron Bennington's my favorite guy on all of radio on any platform. So then we partner him up with ONA. It's gonna be a great show. I just don't want you're not gonna bring up any cupcakes on stage, are you, brother?
Am I gonna bring up what?
The cupcakes. They're saying they're gonna bring celebrities out there to give cupcakes. You're not doing that, right?
I don't know if I'm one of the. I'm not sure if they're one of the celebrities giving out cupcakes. I don't know what's gonna happen, but. I'm hoping I get a call from Saber, one of the staff, that I got a ticket.
Yeah, let's E-Rock or one of the guys hook you up. Well, you're a big deal over there. You have to throw your weight around a little bit. You're a big deal. You make a lot of money for them. You and Princess Di get tickets and be done with it.
Yep, I know. Hopefully we got to get the. Well, I don't want it to backfire with me, but I'm encouraging all the listeners to get paid with ONA, so ONA to make sure I get a ticket.
We'll help out any way we can, Bobo. And thanks for calling. Thanks for waiting patiently. I really appreciate it, buddy. All right, let's go Mets. All right.
All right, I'm gonna catch the rest of the game. Hopefully, we cover behind and win this.
Oh, we got it. We got it. 95 wins your butt, Bobo. Thanks, brother. The great Bobo from Queens. Frequent caller on the Opening Anthony show. They love him. Like I said, I bumped into this guy at McFadden just randomly one day, and we started talking and hit it off. Nice guy. He's just a diehard Mets fan. There was no doubt he was going to be at opening day. You're going to meet him because we're going to go down there for his birthday. We're going to have a big party down at McFadden. Alan Quinn's going to be there. The whole gang's going to be down.
I can't wait.
It's going to be a good time. But we love Bobo. So, all right, Neil, we've waited long enough. Let's finish our talk about the Mets. Bobo's sticking with his 95-win prediction, which I like. I think that Sandy Alderson clearly listens to the show. We already know he does because then he calls up, you know, a couple days after Bobo calls in and says 95 wins, Sandy Alderson's behind closed doors telling everybody 90 wins. Neil, I mean, what are we thinking here? You haven't been on the show in a while. I mean, is it really going to be another 73-win season?
I mean, you know, just reading that BuzzFeed article that I posted and linked to, I mean, they nailed my thought process to a T. I mean, it's like you keep making excuses. You keep saying, you keep reasoning and trying to use, like, weird logic. And I mean, you can just see they're falling into the same traps as last year, where they get guys in scoring position and they can't bring them in. I mean, when you have a guy on third with less than two outs, that should be a run every single time. And you know, the fact that Ike Davis is still on this ball club and Bobby Parnell is the closer is like it boggles my mind. I can understand it. If you're in some kind of market that doesn't care about the team, but you have all these Mets fans who are so passionate and are dying to give you their money to put a quality product on the field, and you keep rolling out the same garbage and saying it's new and improved garbage, that's a slap in the face. They're openly mocking us now and saying, hey, come on out to the field. We're totally different now, even though we're not. We're completely the same. If anything, we've taken a step back. I mean, I completely don't understand the signing of Chris Young. I've questioned the Curtis Granderson signing from day one, as you know. And, you know, I mean, so Darno doesn't look like he's going to pan out. Wilmer Flores, another prospect, looks like he's not going to be that good. So, I mean, you know, it makes me – I just want to be a fly on the wall in Sandy Alderson's office. And I know that he's pretty – he's kind of a stubborn dude. But, I mean, at some point, you got to take a look and say, this is not going to cut it. And, you know, I mean, I'm looking at the stadium right now. It's friggin' game two of the season, and it's seats are empty all over the place. All over the place. And it's the division game.
You know what I get the sense of that? I mean, so yesterday, you're talking about Lucas Duda. So I post on Facebook, can somebody please explain to me why Lucas Duda is on this roster? Because it makes no sense to carry two left-hand first baseman-only players on your roster, especially when you have Staton, who's a righty, who's going to be playing against a lot of left-handed pitchers like he is tonight, and you're not going to put Duda in the outfield against a righty. Like, a National League team cannot just carry two left-hand hitting first basemen and just say, well, we need a lefty off the bench. He needs to be able to play multiple positions at some other kind of role when you already have Staton on your team to be your backup first baseman. And in a pinch, you know, you could always put Murph over there, you know, in a pinch and put Eric Young Jr. at second base. I mean, out of all the things that Sandy Alderson, you can criticize him for, and there's a million of them, to me, this idea, and I blame him more than Collins, obviously, for this decision. They just don't want to make a decision. And the argument is, well, we have a game next week, next weekend, 10 days from opening day. We have a game against a three-game set out in Anaheim where we're going to need a DH. So we're going to carry him all the way until then. And nobody really won the job, so we're just going to carry both of them. I mean, in what world is this acceptable, Neil?
it's not, and that's why I kind of put my foot down with that article. I mean, you know, the Noah Syndergaard's nonsense is driving me up a wall. I don't understand how, you know, the expectations aren't high for this team. You're telling me that what is holding you back from bringing him up? What exactly is holding you back? The fact that he's in a fragile mental state, that he might, like, pull, like, whatever his face is that went bonkers on the mound? Like, I mean, is that really the concern here, that if he gets ripped in this first couple of appearances or every appearance, that all of a sudden he's going to get really down on himself? I mean, I'd rather see the kid come up and just say, hey, you do you. Don't try to overextend yourself. Stay within yourself. And if you get ripped, you get ripped. You get pounded, you get pounded. We know that you are a good pitcher. We just want you to do you. And from what I saw in spring training and from what I heard, he held his own. So why is he not on the roster? Why is he not in the mix? Why do we have Dice K and Bartolo Colon in the mix? And, you know, it's like I'm looking at our rotation right now. Dylan, like, I don't even understand what's going on. Dylan G was the opening day starter. Then we have Colon, and then we have Wheeler. It's weird. And now Farnsworth is warming up. This is just ridiculous. I can't take it.
Well, I'm gonna disagree with you on Syndergaard. And I know, again, I'm in the very small minority here. But that's one decision, and it's strictly financial, that I kind of agree with. Because in reality, we know the Mets aren't going to be great this year, and they're not going to make a run at the playoffs. And this idea that he's going to put a ton of fannies in the seats, he will for a game or two. I don't know that it's going to make them a ton of money. What he is doing is if they could wait until June and they save him that extra year of arbitration, in the idea that these guys all do pan out and they're all ready to go, and Harvey, Wheeler, Syndergaard, Montero are all there, in that year when you're going to need to go out and add a bet, and you're going to be so thrilled that they're saving, they're still paying him, you know, the whatever minimum he's getting, the $500,000, and you have that extra several million dollars to go out and add a bat in that year because you're hoping that they're good. So the idea that we're being like that impatient, like it's got to happen now because I'm so sick of how bad they are, the idea makes sense to me that we're not going to win this year. And so in 5 years when he would normally be arbitration, well, 4 years when he's been arbitration ready, we're going to save that extra year and use that money to add the bat that we need to put us over the top. And then all the Mets fans are going to say, thank God we weren't so short-sighted that we needed to make this, you know, we're costing ourselves down the road to do that. You get any, does that make any sense, Neil, or am I off base?
I guess, but in the current landscape, baseball landscape, the way that the game works now, it's so rare that you're able to keep a cast of characters together. And so, you know, we had this argument when, Strasburg and the Nationals, well, should they bring him back for the playoffs? And it kind of bit him in the butt, you know, towards the end there. But, I don't see, other than, like, the Cardinals, I don't see many teams able to keep a group of players together for a long enough time to see that kind of success come to fruition. And so, for me, it's like I'd rather just see Syndergaard come up, take his lumps this year, and develop them in this year, because supposedly 2015 is the year, and that's the year that we're going to make our push. So it's like, do you really want him, you know, I'd rather get it. But if you're saying that it's somehow going to affect next year's salary, because 4 years down the road, newsflash, Michael, we're not going to have a lot of players that we have now. I don't see, like, Harvey sticking around, considering that every time he opens his mouth, it's like national headlines, and there's controversy everywhere. So, I mean, Harvey's a ticking time bomb. I'd rather see, you know, if next year is the year, then I'd want to get as many, you know, major league innings in Syndergaard as possible.
Oh, see, I don't think next year's the year. I think realistically the year is going to be somewhere around 2017. And I kind of believe that there's a trend in Major League Baseball, and I think it's a good segue to get into, like, the Trout and the Cabrera thing, just to lock your guys up before they become free agents. I think if you throw money at – so say next year Harvey comes back and he looks great, and then the following season is the second year after, typically they're really good, and you could lock him up before he becomes a free agent, give him long-term guaranteed money,
the guy who's got arm surgery, he'd be an idiot to just say, no, I'm going to just keep, you know, fighting you in arbitration so I could hit it, you know, big a couple years down the road. I think that they can lock him up before he hits free agency. I think they've got Wright locked up for a long time. You've got to hope that, you know, Darnold does something. Greg Anderson will still be under contract, and, you know, they're going to have Legar. I think that, you know, by the end, you're going to start adding pieces. Add a couple. In 2016, that maybe submit arbitration. You've got a, you know, $8 for him. You could still get him at the league minimum, and we could take that and buy something else. I don't know. Maybe he's on his spin because I'm not. But let's transition over to a couple of big contracts that went, and I'm continuing on this. Now, the 10-year contract that I clearly really fan, we're going to justify it, but I feel like it's just short-sighted for any fan to say, well, that's a dumb contract. Because the reality is that somebody's going to do that. So you have to do it. I'm going to kill the top, giving Miguel Cabrera 10 years, 31 years, even though the back end of that contract is not going to, they have to do it. And they did it. And they're gonna pay for it. They're saying to themselves, we got a good pitching staff, we got a good lineup, we could maybe go a couple World Series in the next 5 years, and we'll worry about.
And not just because of what he does on the field, winning MVPs, triple crown. That's right. This is the thing I thought of when I first saw the deal, which was, this is a city that has had just as many bad breaks as one big American city can get.
Yeah.
And, you know, other than the Verlander pitches and now you trade Fielder to this, I mean, which is a phenomenal down there. The draw down there, and a guy who could win another triple crown easily. I mean, it's not that it's an easy thing to do, but when you hit the way he does, that's a guy that even if they start cutting payroll, even if they cut payroll at any point, people will still come to see this guy hit. They just will. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know,
when they're back into that contract, that's going to be someone who's getting all these pretty home runs and they're selling T-shirts. The same thing that justified the A-Rod contract, which obviously didn't pan out. Yeah, well, who's going to make that money back in the fact that when he hits his 600, when he passes Willie Mays, when he does all these his deep RBI or whatever he's going to get to, we're going to be the one that's going to happen. Are you? What did you think of that?
What?
I mean, to me, that deal got killed. And
what he back when he's 40.
Yeah,
I don't care. 6 years.
Well, that was my point with the Cano deal. The idea that it was like the Yankees are about the roster in 2020 more than they're worrying about now, it scared the hell out of me if I'm a Yankee fan. Because clearly their team would be better if they had Robinson Cano this year. It's not a doubt in your mind.
No, you know what I'm saying? What's amazing is just talk about the Yankees. I mean, you give Ellsbury that contract, then you give Gardner 4 years, $56 million for Brett Gardner, who I like. Brett Gardner as a ball player, but is he a $14 million a year player? Had you not done either one of those things, you could have given Cano $31 million a year.
Well, the thing is, the annual salary was not that much different. It was the ninth and tenth year. So it's not even about their payroll right now. They could have afforded it, clearly, because they made him an offer at $28 million a year, whatever. They just didn't want to give him 10 years. So that's all they're saying is they're just making some line in the sand where they're not doing that. Now, what's so funny about Yankee fans is somehow they're spinning this Mike Trout getting a 6-year, $145 million contract. And I saw it in several different Yankee fan outlets that this was a dumb move for him because he could have made so much, because the Yankees were just going to throw so much money at him because he's a Jersey guy and he's going to come. And the idea of Yankee fans is just a foregone conclusion. They're going to get whoever they want. And if you don't want to come to the Bronx, then you're just out of your mind. And that's why Robinson Cano is a jerk, because he didn't want to give a discount. I mean, who would just give up $50 million?
You know what Trout's done is Trout has done what I said, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, that Jeter should have done. Jeter should have signed the contract that he did at the time to bring him into his 30s.
Yeah.
He should have signed the deal being who he is, what he means to the Yankees, what he meant to them at that time. He should have signed the deal that brought him to free agency when he was 28, 29. And that's exactly what Trout's done.
Yeah.
He's brought himself to the point where when he comes up at the end of this contract that he just signed with the Angels, he's going to be maybe even before his prime.
Yeah, he's going to be younger than Cabrera is.
It's
now.
Absolutely terrifying if you're a team who says we're going to pay this guy, because it's like, well, get your paycheck. What am I saying?
I don't know.
Yeah, get your checkbook out.
I mean, right now he was probably making $500,000 or whatever it was. Probably making.
They gave him a $20,000 raise last year. That's all they could do.
So they're locking him up. Like that's. I mean, for him to just. Say no, I don't want to do that. I don't know who it is. I'm assuming it's Boris. But if it is Boris, can we just transition over to Scott Boris for a while? Because I don't, for the life of me, understand why people sign with this guy.
Right.
He called. You know how much he cost Steven Drew?
Yep.
He got offered a 1-year, $14.1 million qualifying offer from the Red Sox. This is a guy who hit .250 last year with 5 stolen bases. Not a speedy guy. 12 home runs. Plays a good glove, but let's not make him out to be, you know, Ray Ardonis here. Okay? So he's a very good defensive shortstop, middle-of-the-road hitter, getting $14 million this year.
Yep.
Turned it down because Boris said, I can get you 5 for 50. Mm-hmm. Now, who is going to give Steven Drew 5 for 50? This guy hasn't – last year was his first semi-full season, you know, 124 games, since 2010. You know what I mean? This guy is not a young chicken who's coming up, and he's had injury history. And even when he's healthy, he had one great year back in, I guess, 2008 or 2009. But really, other than that, he's been a solid, productive shortstop. And so he not only cost him the $14 million this year, because he's never going to make that back, it's just he's not even playing baseball. So now he's going to come in, and he's going to sign somewhere. Come June 1st, you don't have to give up that qualifying pick.
Right.
But what world does this guy believe? And he just believed his agent. I don't blame Steven Drew at all. But it doesn't make any sense to me as a, just a logical human being who knows a little bit about baseball and the landscape of things. Right away, when I heard he turned that down, I'm like, and that's why when all these Mets fans, we got to go out and give him, maybe we can get him for 3 for $30. You're going to get Steven Drew 3 years, $30 million in injury history. He's going to hit you two. Are you crazy?
I remember seeing 86 Mets hero Ray Knight interviewed years ago. And the Mets had offered him, I forget what the figures were, but if it was like $400,000 a year, his agent told him, I'll pay you way more than that. So he turned the Mets down, and like 6 weeks later he ends up signing Baltimore or Cincinnati or something like that for like $280,000. And he said in this interview, he's obviously, you know, well retired at that point, that the player's job to understand him is his agent. Because you can't just listen to your agent because he's always going to tell you how good you are. He's there, that's what they're going to do. So if you're Steven Drew, more to the point, forget Boris, because we know he can be a jerk, but if you're Steven Drew, when you look around Major League Baseball, do you see a team that's going to pay you $10 million a year for 5 years when you look, get a copy of your baseball card, look at it,
turn it over.
That's what I don't get. It's like, I understand Boris saying, look, I know I'm a brilliant, brilliant businessman. I'll get you whatever I think I'll tell you that I'll get you. But it's, to me, it's up to Drew to eventually turn him and go, $14 million, and when I go out this year and I bat .260, then next year we'll see if I can maybe get 8.
Yeah.
But you're not getting 50. And the idea that a guy with the kind of history he's had with some injuries and inconsistent performances, and you're on top of it, you're going to get the chance to play back in Boston. I mean, that stuff just gets lost. I understand how important money is, but you're going to get the chance to go back to Boston where you just won the World Series and you played like garbage. And now you're just saying, no, I'm going to go get $36 million somewhere else. And now where is he?
Yeah, he's sitting there.
I mean,
he's sitting up, probably.
Honestly, when he signs, someone will sign him. What's he going to get now? Some prorated deal for 1 year? I mean, what's he going
to
get now?
You want to hear, so that's a crazy rejection. To me, this is even crazier. Now, the reports are out. This is another Scott Boras client. Max Scherzer, right? Cy Young, arm, great guy. Should have won the ball game today. No, Joe Nathan blows the game. But, I mean, realistically, the guy that, a guy who just had one great season.
Yeah.
Let's not make him out. The rumors were the Tigers offered him 6 years. He's in a contract here. A 6-year, $144 million extension for a pitcher. who is turning 30 this year.
That's $24 million a year.
24
right?
a year, exactly. Yeah. 24 a year for a pitcher turning 30 this year with one good season on his belt.
Right.
Boris told him to turn it down because he needed 8 years. Now, to me, it's even crazier for a pitcher to do because a third of the pitchers in baseball at that time had gone to surgery, and some of them had it multiple times.
Right.
The idea that you're getting after really just cashing out, I mean, he's been good. I mean, he's been a talent when he was in Arizona and everything. But you have one outstanding season where you also happen to have the best run support of any pitcher in the American League. You're going to get $24 million a year for 6 years, and you're going to turn it down. So now you're going into next season, you're going to turn 31, and you're going to want 8 years then. You know what I'm saying? Like, it to me, that is even crazier than Stephen Drew, and that's another Scott Boras talk. Like, that has just got a recipe for disaster. The risk-reward there, I mean, what's he going to get at max? Let's just say, in a perfect world, somebody, the Yankees come in and give him 8 for $200, right? So now you're $60 million, a lot of money, right, an extra 2 years. But if you get hurt, it becomes nothing. It's like the deal or no deal game. I mean, to me, as a pitcher, especially injury-wise, a hard thrower, does that not just strike you? When I heard that, I said, this has to be wrong.
Well, I mean, it strikes me as crazy. It might be splitting hairs, but in my mind, I still think a guy like Stephen Drew is crazy because I still think even if Scherzer has some kind of injury or something, he still has some life left in his career. I mean, you look at a guy like Drew, sometimes at times in his career, it looked like he's three at-bats away from AAA. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? So if you're turning down 50, Scherzer could look at it and go, you know what, my arm's in great shape. I feel great. I never pitched better. I'm going to finish this year out. And you know what? Then we'll talk to not only Detroit, but we'll bring in the Red Sox, Yankees, and Dodgers and Cubs. And we'll see then if I can get those 2 extra years. And, you know, he might get 2 extra years for even less money per. But to him, it's another $50 million. I mean, you know, it could be something along those lines. So, to me, Drew is still nuts.
You still think so?
First of all, I'm signing either contract.
Yeah.
In my mind. But I'm just saying, to me.
And that's not just me being like a guy like,
No.
I mean, great. It's all ridiculous monopoly money anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, just straight business-wise, for a pitcher to be getting that kind of extension offer locked up, like in the middle of your season. Not like he's a free agent. And they offered him this, like, you know, the off season.
Right.
They offered this, and he could say, I can get more on the open market. He's got to pitch an entire season where a lot can go wrong. Justin Verlander had a bad season last year. You know, like, a lot can go wrong. Look at, they just gave Kershaw all this big money. He might be out months now with his back injury. He's not allowed to throw a baseball for, like, you know, three weeks or something.
Right.
So a lot can happen. He gets one little tweak of an injury or whatever, and that's a whole different ballgame. Neil, are you listening, or are you just off grid or what?
No, I'm here. I mean, I don't know. I'm starting to think that it's the money that is being thrown at players is just, it's no longer about wins and losses or statistics on the field. There's got to be some kind of off the field element that we're not considering that is raking in the bucks that makes that kind of investment recoupable. I mean, I don't know, because I mean, history has proven that these contracts are just absolute pile of dog mess. So, I mean, you know my stance. My stance has long been, why would you pour all that money into one player when you could spread it around and get a handful of players of decent quality? I mean, you think about the Cabrera situation, his best years are behind him. Do you think that he's going to continue – you know, 5 years down the road, he's gonna be putting up the numbers that he was. I mean, is he going to be carrying the team into his late 30s? I just don't see it. You're seeing it with Pujols and Hamilton and Anaheim. And, I mean, the Trout situation, completely different. I think that is money well invested, smartly invested. Because the kid's an all-star, and he's only, what, 21, 22 or something like that? So, I mean, that to me is like, that's perfect. That's right up my alley. But as far as investing in guys that are, you know, he's going to be 31 next month, Cabrera? It just, I don't know. I don't know. And then you look at the Scherzer situation, and it's like, I mean, that's a lot of money for a guy who only plays once every 4 or 5 games. You know, that's just, to me, you know, with Tanaka, I knocked the Tanaka signing with the Yankees because it's just that's money that you could spread out you could take maybe half that salary and give it to you know, a quality starter, and you give the other half to a couple of certified bench players, maybe a guy who's able to be platoon out there. There must be something else that we're not considering that makes it worth it, because you keep seeing these deals, and I know that you're saying that, okay, you want to lock up guys before they hit the free agent market, but the Cabrera situation is just like, I mean, was anyone really considering paying him that much?
You know, I don't know if they were or not. The Cabrera situation, I could see the argument against it, but do you understand, I mean, the idea that Max Scherzer would reject that contract, regardless of whether it made sense on the Detroit side, how could he reject the contract? You know, that last season, not only was his first 21 season, it's his first sub-3 ERA season. He's got an ERA for his career in the mid-3s. You know, it's not like this guy is Clayton Kershaw. He had one very good year.
Maybe he's just unhappy there. I mean, that's something that we never take into consideration. I mean, we sit here and say that it's all about the money with these players and that they should worry about other things. I mean, do you agree with that? Sometimes you should worry about maybe your kids are in school and they're happy there, whatever. Maybe he's miserable in Detroit. I don't know. You know what I mean? But if you just look at it from dollars and cents, a deal like that is always going to look crazy. It's going to look crazy if your team plays on the moon. Like, it's going to look nuts. But maybe he doesn't like Detroit.
Not like the city. But, I mean, you got to like they've been in the playoffs the last 3 years.
You got to love that paycheck.
You've got to like that paycheck. Goes a long way in Detroit.
Yeah.
For $144 million, you could buy Detroit.
You could buy at least South Detroit.
You could buy blocks and blocks and make Scherzer land if you wanted to. You could buy the prison, and they'll throw in 72 houses in a block, and you can have, I mean, their houses are like $8,000 then. I would buy up, literally, I'd just buy up a house and just make it Disneyland. I'd make every little house have little trap doors and, you know, haunted houses. That's what I would do.
They might let you play on the Red Wing. Third line winger.
You could have a significant role on the Red Wing.
Absolutely.
Tell me what the draw is. Is there going to be a time when Scott Boras just loses it, like Jerry Maguire style, and everybody loses, like leaves him? Because what is he adding? I mean, Jay-Z can get you a big contract. Why are you with Scott Boras when he just seems to kill his players?
I mean, it's the relationship that we don't see, the behind-the-scenes type stuff that he must say to these players to make them think that he's looking out for their best interests. I mean, that's how he's gotten to the place where he is now. I mean, Jay-Z is kind of a different story because it's Jay-Z. I think players just look at that as like, wouldn't that be funny as hell, and B, wouldn't that be cool? You know, I get to hang with Jay-Z, and he's going to get me serious dollars anyway, because I don't know why. Everyone thinks he's this awesome businessman. I look at someone like David Wright, where he really could have raked the Mets over the coals and really didn't, you know, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's a Mets fan himself, but, why can't baseball just install a salary cap like the NFL? I love the way the NFL works. I love how I love it. I can't get enough of it. Michael Vick signed this ridiculous contract, and then he was let go, released, something like that, and he's not owed that money. There's not a lot of money tied up in players if it doesn't work out. They get cut. See ya. Peace out. So it's like, I like that, and that's even weirder for football, because if you think about it, like they actually deserve more money because of the risk factor that's involved. But, I mean, I just like the fact that everyone seems to be on kind of a similar playing field when it comes to football because of the salary cap, and you get to see a lot more interesting moves versus baseball, where it's like, hey, you know, the organizations like New York and L.A. and the bigger markets can just throw as much money as they want at these players, and then if you're a player, there's no downside. There's no downside. What's Pujols' incentive to perform out in Anaheim? Oh, he's going to get booed. Oh, well, he can go home and cry in his Franklin's for hours. I mean, it's so annoying.
I can't stand that argument, dude. I can't stand the argument that these guys
are not, like, trying. That's their life, and that's their livelihood. Like, you work your whole life. I don't believe that these guys just get out there with this money, and it's like, I'm not going to try. You step in the base, especially baseball, because it's a one-on-one matchup thing where it's, like, glaring what you do. I think it's easier to hide and not try on a football field. Because if you're a wide receiver and your assignment on that play is a soft flop, you could be like, whatever. And nobody on the – no, my coaches will yell at me, but no fan's going to know. If you're Albert Pujols, and the idea that you think that he's now, like, slumping because he made all this money, when this guy was on pace to be one of the greatest hitters ever, and he's like, nah, I don't really want to be the greatest hitter ever. I'd rather just sit on my money. It's crazy, Neil.
That's not my point. My point is, you know, I feel like
you
with the NFL. No, my point is in the NFL, you put up or you shut up. You perform, or it doesn't matter what, you know, you have only so much of your money is guaranteed, right? And then, you know, there's an opportunity for the team to cut their losses and not get hit so hard with contracts. Baseball, you get hit so hard with these contracts. That's what I'm trying to say with the salary cap in the NFL. It holds players to a certain standard, and it's saying to them, hey, this is a lot of buku cash, my man, but you got to play, you got to put up or you shut up, and you're not going to see all of it. Baseball, I don't think that's the deal. I really think, like, Bobby Bonilla is still making money. Why?
Making his money, getting his paper. I mean, you can't fault him for that. All right, Neil, the good news is you've just given me a great idea for an article tomorrow. So the big winner here is our listeners and our readers, because I'm sure dozens of people will read it. But, Neil, do you have any due to you seriouses? I will take a break. We'll come back. We'll give us some of that. We haven't had it in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'll give you something.
All right. We'll be right back. We got about 20 minutes left in the show with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out.
Is anyone out there? This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, what we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. Is anyone out there?
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out as always, TriStateSportsGuys.com, Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys, or on Twitter @TriState_Sports. If you're not following us on Twitter, just please follow us. We're not super active on Twitter, but I feel like you should get more active.
I'm getting active.
You're all over it.
I'm doing it.
You're all over. You and just Butch Husky are just chatting it up on there.
Butch is a good guy.
Butch is a guy I can get behind. But we're going to get to, we haven't had it in a couple weeks, we're going to get to a little segment. And if you're new to the show, call it Days, sort of a dude, are you serious? So it's a little segment where Neil likes to take us around the globe, take us around the internet, and give us some stories.
About food.
About food and random questions. And I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give you this little intro, even though it's not your thing, but
say
I just have to hear it.
Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker.
That's for Tony, who's not with us tonight. Pour a little drink out for him. But Neil, you're up. You're up with your duty. You serious? What do you got for us tonight?
Well, I'll start with this, and I'm worried for my health. I'll preface this story by saying that. Because I had the surgery on my knee last Monday, and I'm able to walk without crutches right now, but I'm walking on eggshells, to be honest. I feel like I could go at any second. And now that I've seen this story, it's like it's a foregone conclusion that I'm gonna do what this dude did. The opening day pitch at the Angels game, Don Baylor was the catcher. Don Baylor fractured his femur catching the opening first pitch. This is me in like 5 years.
Yeah, well, can I just say two things about it? First and foremost, he is the toughest human being.
Absolutely.
He didn't, because he's so proud. Like, those old school guys that are so proud definitely didn't want any attention drawn to him. and he just tried to act, tried to stand up, and it was disgusting to watch. He tried to stand up, and then he was just like, didn't want any attention, like somebody there to like, I mean, that is like an old school, like your grandpa toughness. I mean, just, he's 65 years old, his leg broke in half, and he wanted to walk off the field.
He got hit like 8,000 pitches in his career. You know? he got passed by Biggio eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
He just didn't care about 1979 MVP, which he remembered.
But you want, you know, I don't know what else, and I don't want, I mean, I know people criticize this because I sit there and bash my stuff, so like, oh, you're just doing that to be
good.
But Mark Stoolsport, who, like, some people say we're trying to act like them. We're not anything like them at all because we don't. They just put hot chicks and stupid things. But they posted the article, and the guy posted the thing, had the little gif or whatever you call it, where he kept showing it over and over, and he goes, I just can't stop laughing. And I'm not trying to sound like, look, I'm not like a prude where I don't think like funny things are funny. But like, how are you laughing at an all-time great baseball player, toughest guy in the world, breaking his leg like that, like a 64-year-old guy? Maybe I'm getting old, I'm a father and all, but that's, how is that funny? How could, there's not any part of me that watch that and laugh. It may be like, you know, give me the heebie-jeebies. You know, am I just an old-timer, or is that just, that's just like over-the-top stupid by Barstool Sports?
I mean, it's a part sensationalism, you know. It's the shock value that they're going for, I guess. I don't know that I would laugh at someone like Don Baylor, who has been, so, you know, like you guys said, he's just a tough guy, he's a big old bear. But I don't know. To each his own, I guess. I actually just watched that video of the chick in Arizona getting cold cocked, and yeah, that was completely uncalled for.
What was she doing there, dude?
I don't know.
A couple times. What was she doing? Wrong. Where she has to get drilled like that.
She must have dropped some serious, like, Andrew Dice Clay, triumph the insult comic dog type level stuff for this cop to just straight up just, like, he necked her. He just, like, went whatever he had in his hands directly to her neck and through her neck. And it was just like, you know, people were just stunned.
Whatever.
And
the audio didn't pick up her going, hickory dickory dock. Boom.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, my God. You want to talk about really dangerous activities, stuff that,
yeah.
I mean, I'm so glad that I heard this news came down, but, I mean, it's about time in my mind, but playing catch in the parking lot is now banned at the 49ers' new stadium.
What? Why is that? Did they give a reason for that?
The Santa Clara Police Department has laid out a new set of laws set to be passed by the city council for what 49ers cannot do at the new $1.3 billion stadium, which comes with its own jail, which is clutch. I commend them for that. And it will be patrolled by more than 100 cops from around the Bay Area. The following acts are prohibited for fans in stadium parking lots and other areas just outside the stadium. No vehicle training, no idea what that means. Playing sports, including football, bicycling, or skateboarding in the parking lots. One of the rules dictates that in addition to no throwing a football, there's a ban on quote unquote making things airborne. I mean, this has got to be, they call the NFL the no fun league. I mean, they ought to call the 49ers the no funners. I mean, this is ridiculous. I remember watching a playoff game between the Giants and 49ers in 2003. It was when the Giants, that awful ending on the field goal going awry. But I watched a tailgate. They were showing tailgate. People were just, like, calmly sitting around a picnic table, sipping wine and, like, nibbling on cheese. I mean, is this France or what?
Yeah, two points. One is, I'm imagining the police officer from Big Lebowski just sitting there saying, like, get out of my beachfront community, Lebowski. Like, to when they're trying to see these rules out, because, well, that's ridiculous. This is like California laid-back thing. We're not going to throw footballs around. But a second point that was just brought up by a listener here was, are you sure this wasn't an April Fool's joke? Did you read this yesterday? Because this can't be true.
No, this is from 2 days ago. What was yesterday? 2 days ago? No.
Yesterday was 2 days ago.
No, this is from 7 days ago. So unless they're doing some serious, like, pre-April Fool's planning, this is legit.
Yeah, that'd be a hell of an April Fool's joke because it went 7 days. So, I mean, that's crazy. I mean, I don't know. And to me, I love the tailgate. It's the reason to have season tickets. Because you tailgate the same guys. You like to see, like, you know, kids and their fathers throwing footballs around or a couple guys that's out there throwing football around. I saw a lot of reasons for fights at Jets games. I've only seen one where it was caused by a throwing a football around, so I'm going to use this to tell that story. We were sitting there. There was two guys throwing a football back and forth, and this guy just was throwing ducks, and he kept hitting the porta potty. And you hear this guy yell, you know, stop hitting the porta potty. He's taking a dump, clearly. So finally, the guy comes out of the crapper. The ball comes over, sitting on the ground. He takes it. He kicks it over the fence into oncoming traffic and just walks away. And so these kids are like 18-year-old kids that are throwing a football around. They were so scared of this guy, this big burly guy, kicks their football in the oncoming traffic. It was the closest I've seen to a fight. But realistically, that's not something that causes liabilities or fights. It's just stupid.
I'll tell you this. My great-uncle was a New York Giants fan when they left for San Francisco. He hated West Coast sports the rest of his day. And used to say they don't even deserve sports. They have the sun and the beach and all the stuff they do. It's always nice. They don't deserve sports teams. They don't like them like we do. So wherever he is, he's like, a story like this, he's going, I told you.
He did?
They would have never done that outside the bowling ground. Like, a couple kids can't play stickball. This would have, like, you know, I mean, I don't care if they ban it or not, but that's just like the old school.
Yeah. He is sitting.
You're going to ruin the fun? So, like, guys like us shouldn't be throwing a football out of the parking lot.
Yeah.
I mean, we're adults.
Yeah, right.
But if you take a 6 or 7-year-old to the ball game and he or she wants to throw a ball around,
yeah.
You're an idiot for not
there's nothing
that to
happen.
No, it's great.
The guy he's put tickets with got a son who's now in college, but, you know, 5 years ago he's in high school. You throw a football around with him. It's the best thing in the world. The best.
Can I tell you how much I love Dude, Are You Serious?
I love it. Keep rolling, Neil. You got 7 minutes, brother.
So Mike D and I went to Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland, which was known for its Division I lacrosse teams. There's the women's lacrosse team at Penn has been I don't know what to think about this team, to be honest, because they've been accused of trashing a bar, exposing their naughty parts, smoking the ganj, and apparently tipping poorly. According to the Daily Pennsylvanian. Now, this is a two-parter, Michael. First part, do you think that you could actually party with these chicks back in the day? So, like, in your heyday, in your prime in college, when you were like, I've got partying on lockdown, could you hang with, not just hang with, like, physically, but you think you can keep up with the Penn women's lacrosse team?
100%. 100%, without a doubt, back in college. First of all, there was 50 of them. They spent a $1,300 cap. That's not a lot of money. So it's not like these girls are boozing it up. That's, what, $25? What, you know, how much money is that a pop? It's not like it's a crazy, insane amount of money. $60 a pop? Right, but whatever it is. So, yeah. So I'm thinking it's $25 a pop. So I think I could hang with them, you know, alcoholically. And I think I could hang with them. I mean, look, I think I could. But what's your second question?
The second question is, now as a married man and as a father of two, are you scared of these women and the effect that they could have on your daughters?
I am. I will tell you this. My biggest thing, I got two daughters. My biggest thing I'm afraid of is them, like, turning 14 on various levels with the freaking, you know, like, pictures, sending, like, texting and all that stuff. Like, it's so easy to read all these, like, crazy stories. And going, like, you figure, like, I remember, like, days at Johns Hopkins, which is, like, ranked the 500th best party school out of 500 schools, like, right below the Citadel and MIT, right? And I remember seeing awful things going on there. This is UPenn. You think your daughter gets into an Ivy League university? Like, oh, she's my little angel. And she gets out there and she's over there trashing bars and, you know, pulling down their pants and the rest. I mean, that is, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not afraid of spiders, I'm not afraid of ice, I don't have fear. That is, like, my biggest fear is, like, what the hell am I going to do? BYU, all the way.
Send her to West Point. Don't take care of
yeah, my daughter, James, is not, I don't know if she's West Point material.
Yeah, well, I'm going to say this. First of all, I'll drink every one of those under a table somewhere in Pennsylvania if they want. And you know what? Like, the thing I fear with them is they're so unruly. You ever been around, like, drunk college girls? They can't drink worth a damn.
They're horrible.
And they're just the most unruly idiots on the face of the earth. That's what I'd be concerned about. Like, I want to sit in the corner with some whiskey and some beer and drink myself into oblivion. And these girls want to, like, smash things and dance and do crazy stuff. I don't want to do any of that.
That's the bigger thing is that, to me, and this is going to make me sound old, like, the last thing I'd want to do, and it sounds like, oh, hang out with your college, the last thing right now at 33 years old I'd want to do is hang out with these girls. That would be the
right.
worst evening of my
and
life.
Here's the other thing. If I decide to come off the wagon and we try to stay sports festivals, then we're going to go for $1,500.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. In downtown Philly, are you kidding me? Like, that's exactly what's going to happen. And these girls, like you said, there was 50 of them.
Yeah.
I'm going through 4 bills by myself. So I'm not afraid of them on that level, but they're just such, like, clowns when they start getting drunk in their little groups and they act so stupid. And you know what? The Ivy League, are you impressed by the Ivy League?
Absolutely not.
I've never been impressed by the Ivy League.
Not for
me, but I'm just not afraid of them on the level of stuff like this. I mean, come on. You know better than that. Come on. You're Johns Hopkins, but like you said, you're too smart for them.
I want to think that I could still keep up with them to this day, but I feel like I would end up, missing a limb after that kind of night. I don't know. I know it's 10, but I'm frightened for my life around young people nowadays. I feel like they just don't care. I've officially become an old man.
You're an old man that still has a beach house on the Jersey Shore. So you're a lot younger than me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm able because I wear their coloring and their clothing, so I'm like a wolf in sheep's clothing, but it's like reverse, like I'm a sheep in wolf's clothing. You know, it's like I'm just like this timid little sheep that's kind of hopping around, and people will notice me because I got some fake fangs on. And the day that I get uncovered and revealed and exposed is the day I'm going down hard.
Yeah, you get all your party on these chicks, you sit one of them down, and you just try to talk about, like, where their life is headed. Like, come on, sweetheart, figure things out.
I just want to flash forward to, like, 10 years from now to see where they're at. Because, I mean, like, some of them, it's just like a thing where it's like they saw some of the other girls do it, so, like, they join in, but they're not, like, leading the charge. But, like, the girls who are leading the charge on, like, the I don't know if you call it mooning, because it's kind of like, would you call it sunshining? Because it's kind of like the front side as opposed to your back side. I mean, we got to give it a name or something.
Got to be something. Something that my daughters will never be doing. That's what it is.
Well, I mean.
All right, dude, you got like 1 minute left. You got anything else? A quick one?
Yeah, I just ended with this. There's like a new app that the NFL is offering where, season ticket holders or something can click it and they can get access to special features, one of which is you can get a visit from a cheerleader during the game. How many riots is this going to cause?
Oh, my God. Can you imagine that? You know what I want to do? Is like if you know your buddy's on like a first date with a girl and then you order it for him, just to mess with him. Like, my boy Danny here is on a first date with a girl. He's trying to impress him as a gentleman. And some girl from the Jersey, the Jets flight crew comes walking up to him with like a caniche and a beer. Well, there you go, Danny. Yeah, that's a slump ender right there. I like that idea. I would do it.
I think, don't try that stuff in Philadelphia because they don't give a crap about hot girls.
No, they do it. Not in Philly or apparently in Arizona either. All right, Neil, good job. We got 10 seconds left. I'll wrap it up. TriCitySportsGuys.com, Facebook.com/TriCitySportsGuys. Thanks again for Tariq Turner and our buddy out there in Kentucky. Let's go UConn. We'll see you next week.